Hey, the Rewatchables is heading toward 250 episodes. We just put up a new one on Monday. We did Knocked Up. And if you want to hear all 5 years of the episodes, go check out the complete archive, only available on Spotify. Once again, the Rewatchables, the Ringer Podcast Network. You can find it all on Spotify. It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Vrbo. You know, it is stressful enough just with the airport situation. No matter where you're going, it's always packed. You're always worried the weather might be bad. Is my plane going to get delayed? You just want the actual place you're staying at to be a lights out experience. So if you've booked a vacation rental and you found yourself stuck making small talk with the host, or you've arrived to find out it doesn't look anything like the pictures, you know, that's the worst. You could avoid the awkwardness with Vrbo. Vrbo has helped travelers find great private vacation rentals for nearly 30 years. You heard me correctly. So while other vacation rentals can feel like a roll of the dice, relax knowing you booked a Vrbo. Book your private vacation rental in the Vrbo app. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. Put up a new Rewatchables on Monday night. We did Knocked Up. Me, Juliet Libman, Craig Horlbeck. The new categories have been great. Thanks to everybody who suggested one of them. Coming up on this podcast, we're going to talk about Game 3 of the NBA Finals, which I just attended. And then my daughter is going to pop on at the end to give us her breakdown of the latest season of Stranger Things. It's all next. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, taping this, it is 12:04 ET. I guess it's Thursday now?
It's Thursday.
Kevin O'Connor is here. We just attended Game 3 of the 2022 Finals. A game that, as we were walking back home, my dad said, thank God you got him for the podcast because I got nothing left. And it's midnight and I just want to go to bed. It was a draining game. This Celtics team, man, 21 games in the playoffs. And this game was like an appetizer sampler plate of what it's been like to go through this with this team for the last 2 months. They looked amazing. It was all coming together. They're running. They're up early. It looks like they're going to go up by 30. They let the other team back. Nope, they're up again. Halftime, feeling good, not awesome. Should be up more in the third quarter. Completely fall apart. One of the dumbest quarters I've seen them play all year.
Blow the lead. Lose it.
Blow the lead. 7-point play by the Warriors. Oh my God, are we going to blow this? And then all of a sudden they get their shit together. But as they're getting their shit together, ball's flying around. There's loose ball scrums that are like rugby matches. It was, you just never feel safe with this team. But I think that's why I love them. It's like an S&M relationship, KOC. I've never done S&M. I think this is what it's like. You're just tortured. You have like the nipple clamps on. And you're just
were you inspired by the guy who had the wrestling mask on today? Is that what made you think of this?
Machine and 8mm come. I've never seen anything like this team. Did you ever feel like they had this game in hand until
never.
3 minutes left?
Of course
never,
not.
Right?
Well, you can't feel that way, first of all, against a team with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, especially at one point when those guys looked like they were going to light it up.
Yeah.
And like Klay did get some pretty open shots off those screens and handoff actions in the second half. It's just not all of them are going to go. Sometimes that's what it is in the NBA, make or miss. And ultimately, though, for Boston,
did you just
though,
make or miss cliche me?
I did just
wow, that, it's the early. Truth. I was going to say that 2 minutes from now.
It's the truth, Bill. But ultimately here for Boston, though, once again, a resilient team, right? I mean, like that 7-point play in the third quarter as part of a 12-0 Warriors run when it went from, like, I believe it was a Celtics lead by 8 at the time, and then it was a 12-0 run. It was 82-71 at the time, then a 12-0 Warriors run that made it 83-82. But right after that, Celtics had an 11-6 run. It's just up and down constantly. And I mean, for Boston, though, I think even, you know, despite those runs, they felt like a more prepared team to me, the way they were attacking the Warriors. Well,
they definitely went bigger. Yeah, they were doing this thing where they took Williams out basically at the 3-minute mark of the first and third quarters so that they could go a little smaller and then bring him back with some size, because the Warriors don't really have a backup center. But the fact that Curry and Klay felt like they made 53s in this game, they really only made 11. They were allowed 11. But I don't know if they get that Klay game again. Russell and I talked about him in game two, and I was like, I think there's going to be a game in this series where he doesn't have it, and they're going to have to bench him in crunch time. The guy they benched was Poole. Mm. They played Klay over Poole, but it was the same kind of thing where they tried to have some defense and some size.
Yeah.
They didn't have rebound. I mean, the big story of this game, Warriors had 31 rebounds. Celtics had 47. They had 15 offensive. It felt like they found something with Rob Williams and Grant together.
That worked really well.
And Rob looked like I said to Russell, he was like 67% the last game. Yeah. I felt like he was in the 80s in this game, maybe even 91, 92.
Well, I mean, like throughout the series, you know, there was a stat I put out, you know, there's 1.7 points per, you know, pick and roll for the Warriors when Steph Curry faced a drop coverage by the Celtics, which has been weird to see Boston doing that as much as they have. But in this game, you know, they were playing up a little bit higher with Rob Williams. I thought he did a really good job.
Except for the third quarter when they dropped on, like, it felt like 15 straight Warriors made threes.
And not all
Ime
of those.
I thought Ime was going to have an aneurysm in the sideline.
It's strange how they've decided to go with that type of scheme on defense against the greatest shooter of all time. And and yet, like, you say, well, if you switch screens, well, then Steph Curry is one of the greatest isolation, most efficient ISO scorers in recent league history. You can blitz that, but the Warriors have shredded teams when they're blitzed. So there's only so many answers. And I think for Boston, I mean, we'll see how the series develops. They could always pull out a more aggressive scheme later in the series. Maybe you don't want to do that too early. You might want to save it for the right moment. But I thought the adjustments Boston made, you know, with Time Lord playing higher in those pick and rolls, it was the best he's looked in quite a while.
How many blocks? He had four blocks, four loud blocks.
And his timing on those as well.
One seemed like a goaltender, but they didn't call it.
Yeah. Was that the one that went out of bounds?
Yeah, that on the Curry floater. Yeah.
I mean, it was close.
I had a pretty good angle on that. It was pretty close. Yeah. They usually call that a goaltending. So from the Celtics, from a strategy standpoint, they really rode Jaylen in the first quarter, and he was great. I mean, attacking he had 17 Draymond. In the first quarter. Yeah, he only finished with 27. But yeah, what did you see? What were they doing with Jaylen? Because they were trying to get him downhill, trying to get him on pull-ups.
Well, I mean, in general, you know, whether it was against Draymond or somebody else, in game two, we saw the Warriors overhelping a lot of the time. And so they were attacking a matchup knowing help was coming in order to create, you know, motion or get the ball moving or to get driving kicks. And they did a great job in that in this game. But in terms of attacking Draymond, like, that was the adjustment the Warriors made in game two. They moved Draymond off and onto Jaylen Brown. Defending Jaylen Brown did a really good job in that game. And yet in this game, they used that against him. So you're going at Draymond from the perimeter, so he's out of a help position more frequently. And so I thought the Celtics, they came out looking like a totally prepared team, knowing what the Warriors did in game two, attacking that help coverage. And for Draymond, once again, like, he had another poor game. Game one looked like a liability. Game two, he was maybe second best player on the floor behind Steph Curry. And game three, a liability again on offense. Celtics obviously aren't worried about him behind the arc. Wasn't really making a difference as a playmaker. And then defensively,
didn't rebound.
And defensively, he didn't seem like he was able to stop Jaylen Brown on a lot of those drives to the rim. He's Draymond Green, but the Celtics attacked him like he wasn't, you know, a multi-time all-defensive guy. It didn't matter. He didn't make that impact tonight.
When the Celtics are going, it's weird. They're almost like going at 45-degree angles instead of immediately downhill. Mm-hmm. When they're just trying to go straight downhill, they seem to have trouble. But when it's like guys curling around things or guys going left to right,
Tatum drives,
to left.
Right? Yeah. When he takes kind of those weird angle layups, bank shots, right?
So that seems to work for them. And then whenever they're just playing with pace, it's great. Third quarter, they just come out and they're just super slow. And you can feel it. The crowd now has watched so many Celtic games. Like, they're even like Marcus doing the thing, they're rolling the ball in bounds and he's letting it roll to midcourt. Yeah. And it's like, that's the opposite of what we should be doing. We should be flying down there and trying to, especially Steph got four fouls, 2 minutes into the fourth quarter. Yeah. I just felt like, just go up and down, try to keep this pace. But then that was right what the Warriors wanted.
Yeah, it's it's strange how they fall into those habits. It's so weird. Do you contribute that to this being just a young team? Are they just not a smart team? I mean, like, what do you think there's
like a playoff savviness that they don't have enough accrued savviness yet.
Mm-hmm.
They just haven't played enough of these games. So
they played a lot of them.
This year they have. It's just like, you know, I think part of it is even that Marcus was good for the most part tonight, but he's not like your typical point guard, like a sense of the momentum of the game, how it's shifting. Like, how many fast breaks did they screw up today? How many layups did Tatum miss? Like, you know,
free throws missed too, for that.
Free throws missed. Like, it felt like they should have been up 30 in the first quarter or the first half. But, you know, that's the thing. Because logically, you think, all right, the Warriors will come back. They'll probably get better calls around in game four and whatever. But I didn't feel like the Celtics played, like, awesome today.
No.
Like, what Celtic, other than Rob, who basically that was what Rob looked like in January, February, March. Williams was better.
And Jaylen Brown was really good.
Jaylen was good in that long stretches.
Half, that first half against Draymond, he did a really great
job. But nobody was, like, amazing in the game for the Celtics. And I think if I'm the Warriors, I'm really nervous about all the layups the Celtics missed. I mean, Tatum must have missed, what, five?
Yeah.
Four or five just layups, point-blank layups. Where it seemed like he was rushing it because he was afraid of getting fouled. And then they missed a bunch of free throws, too.
Do we know what Jason Tatum's shoulder issue was? What was it, the first play of the game he was grabbing at it?
I texted a friend of mine who may or may not be employed with the Celtics during the game. And I was like, if Tatum had a fucking separated shoulder for the last month and you didn't tell me, I'm going to be furious. I'm going to be really mad at you. We're going to have an issue. Because you could tell me after the series, you're going to be like, oh, by the way, he had a slight separation of his shoulder. There's been moments.
Are you hinting at that?
I have no inside info. I don't know. Yeah. I've been watching him with this quote unquote stinger that he has. Yeah. I don't know. What game that I went to that game? That was game three of the Miami series.
Yeah, last round.
And I went to game three and I've been to, like, I guess, four games since. And every game he's doing these weird shoulder things and shaking it.
Yeah,
and
there's
threes that just don't look like Tatum threes. And then he's fine. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the adrenaline, but I can't figure it out. Would you be shocked if he had a separated shoulder?
I don't know what it could be.
Or like a separated shoulder, they pop back in, but it's not
maybe it just needs time to heal completely. It could be something like that.
What kind of stinger is this? UFC fighters don't have stingers that last this long.
Talk to Dr. Brian Suterer, that YouTuber. You know him?
Let's bring him in. Yeah, yeah. He was 9 for 23 again today. 9 assists. I thought he had a good control over the game, but it easily could have been a 40-point game for him.
Yeah,
I actually felt like it was sitting there. I liked all the shots he took. And what's weird is since game six of the Milwaukee series, which was the best game he's ever played in his life, I don't know if he's played a great start-to-finish game. I think he's had stretches. He's had quarters. He's also had moments where you feel like he's unraveling a little bit. And in terms of like him hitting like a greatness point, I don't think it's happened these last two rounds. And that also, they played 21 playoff games. He's young. He's had to play two-way, the whole thing. Like, I get it. This is a grind. There's a finish line. But it's weird that love averages with how talented he is, right? You would think he would have one awesome one.
I mean, so with Tatum, though, I think what you're touching on, this is the growth of him becoming a star, though. The fact that he hasn't had this amazing scoring performance where he's super efficient and on a high volume and he's playmaking. And yet, like, he can go 3 for 17 and you can come away feeling like, well, he was making his teammates better with passes. He was defending at a high level, rebounding. And that, like, is really the mark of a true star, where even when they're not scoring, you still feel like they make a positive impact on your team, leading to wins or at least have a chance to win games. And I think
is what he couldn't do 6 months ago.
Exactly. And I think with Tatum, that's what we've seen. And then with Jaylen Brown, he's slid into that number two role. And sometimes he does, you know, he is the lead guy, like we saw in that first half against Draymond Green, and the balance those two guys have together. You know, it's crazy, you know, to be in Boston, you know, right now during the NBA Finals, watching this team, knowing what the conversation was just, you know, 6 months ago with these two guys specifically. And the fit, you know, these guys aren't yet in their primes. They're still growing. They're still gaining experience, as you just said. But for them to be in this position now, considering what it was in December and even early January, like it blows my mind. It really does. The growth is crazy.
Two more wins to win the title. They have two more home games. So
You feeling good? Are you feeling confident?
Well, you know, what's interesting about this team, it doesn't feel like a championship team to me in the sense that they just seem so young and
they're sloppy still.
And sloppy. And yeah. It's just, but the 08 team was like this too, right? The 08 team really had a breakthrough in the last two Detroit games of that series when it was tied 2-2. They had played a 7-gamer against Atlanta, another 7-gamer against Cleveland. They had these stretches. They would suck. They'd look good. They'd suck. Yeah. Play great defense. They'd fall apart for a quarter. It was very similar to this. And then they got over the hump in that Detroit series, went into the Lakers series, and really they should have won in five. And I'm still amazed they didn't win game five in LA. Scott Foster maybe helped a little bit on that one, but it felt like they were just better. In game six, they kill them.
Winning at home was pretty good, though.
Winning at home was great.
Got the Doc Rivers Gatorade shower. That was pretty
But
cool.
it feels like, as even though the Celtics are two games away from the finals, it feels like they haven't had that great stretch yet. Because to me, the comparison, and look, the 91 Bulls had Jordan. He's the greatest player of all time. Then Jordan and Pippen, who I think is one of the 30 best players of all time. But if you go back and look at that 91 Bulls stretch, like, they really hit a high level. I mean, they only lost, I think they only lost maybe two playoff games. They lost a one Laker game in the finals, and I think they might have lost like a Philly game. But if you go back and look at the box scores, and they just kind of got over the hump, and by somewhere at that point in the Lakers series was the overtime game. They just went to another level, and it was like, we're great. We're going to win this. I haven't seen that yet from the Celtics. We have the stretches. I don't know if this team is great. We might look back and think it's amazing that they had Jalen and Tatum and all these role players. And we're like, man, that team was loaded. Jesus. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if they can close this. Well, I mean, wouldn't be shocked if they lost the series.
No, of course not. Like, the Warriors come with the experience of winning the NBA Finals, and they have, you know, one of the greatest players of all time in Stephen Curry.
And Klay can remind me to talk about him later.
And Klay can still go off. I mean, you mentioned he could have a stinker of a game. He could also have a 45-point performance. Like, Klay's still capable of that.
I was thinking about this because to me, the true definition of being great is consistency. Mm-hmm. I think anybody can be great every once in a while, but like, we've watched Tom Brady for 20 years. What made him great was how consistently very good to great he was, right? I think as you get older, you can be great every once in a while, but you can also stink. And the days where you can seem great, I felt like even, you know, when I was writing, not that I was a great writer, but I felt like I could still get to where I used to get to sometimes, but not all the time. That was the difference. Like when I was like really cooking, I always felt like anytime I could, like, all right, I can write something I'm happy with. And I think with Klay, like, he was really good tonight. I think he could go like 1-for-15 in game four, right? I don't trust the consistency. Whereas Curry, he's just, oh my God.
He's something special, isn't he?
They're throwing the whole team at him tonight. Wait, I want to hold that. The Celtics, for the finals right now on FanDuel, they're minus 230. I lost another same game parlay. I had the Celtics to win, Jalen 20 plus points.
Got that.
Draymond under 11 and a half points.
There was more.
And Derek White, 9 points. And Derek White didn't play for the last 19 minutes, and I lost by 2 points.
You had Derek White at 7 points. He
got benched.
There were more FU Draymond chants than there were Draymond points.
Yeah, seriously. Draymond was terrible, which we discussed. But yeah, the Celtics now are minus 230. On FanDuel.
And are they now like 100% on like the analytics models to win the finals now? Because they've been 80% since January.
I know, they're probably like at least low 90s. But the thing is, the Warriors are going to be throwing the kitchen sink on Friday. I certainly don't feel safe. We'll take a quick break. I want to talk about Curry. I want to talk about Draymond. And then some other things we heard as we were at the game. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Take a minute to check your social battery. How you doing? Does the thought of social events make you feel excited or exhausted? Are you like me, where you're looking at April and you're just thinking, man, there's a lot of sports. There's a lot of podcast content. There's a lot of stuff to watch. I got to make sure I don't lose control of the narrative here. Got to spend time with the family. Got to unwind. Got to spend time with my friends. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up heading into the summer. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time, but therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. And when you're feeling worn out from socializing, therapy can give you the help for the tools you need to take care of yourself and recharge, because a full battery is the key to a full life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Bill Simmons today to get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/Bill Simmons. We talked about Curry. There's just nothing like it in person to root against it. But also, like, that crowd was nuts tonight. It was a nice, drunk, midweek Boston crowd. The game started at 9:10.
Sensational crowd.
Sensational crowd. Yeah. The crowd was into it, which is what made it so amazing in third quarter that the Warriors managed to take him out of the game. Curry, the fear factor with that dude when he's... I don't even know who the last guy who was like that. I honestly don't think Kobe was like that. LeBron had the Miami series, but for the most part, he was pretty streaky. Curry, it's like shocking when it doesn't go in. I think it's going in every time. Don't you yes. feel like shocked when he misses? Yes. Oh my God, he missed.
Of course. He's Steph Curry. I mean, we've seen him not miss ever. And with a guy like him, he's doing it while they're attacking him on defense, play after play. And he's doing it while, like you said, they have three guys on him sometimes.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. Like, there's some threes he hits where, like, Celtics, you know, they're playing high in the pick and roll. Maybe they could be playing even higher. They send, you know, Derek White or whoever draping over him from behind, contesting the shot. And yeah, it's still going in. You still have the expectation that it's going to go in. It's always crazy with Stephen Curry. And has there been anybody that you have that level of fear? And I don't think so.
I mean, Jordan.
But like, I think part of it with Steph is the
fact. LeBron.
But the fact he's doing it from behind the arc. That adds fear, though, because it's literally worth an additional point.
The 7-point play. First of all.
That was a strange call.
It was a 30-footer. Weird call. I've never seen a 7-point play in my entire life. Celts were up 9. All of a sudden, they're up 2. 7-point play. 3-pointer. Free throw. They keep the ball. And then Porter hits a heave.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that in my life. But the three that Curry hit with Horford coming out on him. And it was like a 30-footer. And that was like the secret part of the play. It was like, Jesus Christ. Who else even comes close to making that?
Nobody.
So,
Bill, I tweeted a couple weeks ago, Steph is, you know, top 10 all time. And like maybe like he's 9, 10, maybe he's 11.
I gotta look at
my list. Is that premature to have him that? No.
I moved him. I gotta look at my Pantheon list. There was a play with 6 seconds left in the shot clock. And the Celts got to stop and the Warriors had to take it out of bounds. And they threw it in a Curry. He's like 35 feet away, like near like the logo. And I said to my dad, Marcus, get up. He's going to fucking shoot. And he shot, like as I was saying it, he was shooting and it was like a 33 footer. He missed it. I have Curry. I had Curry in the Pantheon. I had him 16th.
Okay.
So he's like underneath Moses and Shaq and Hakeem, Oscar Robertson. I mean, the thing that's in play for him now is can he end up being the third best guard of all time? Can he put together a resume that passes Oscar and Jerry and Kobe just from the totality of it? And, you know, he probably will.
Like if he lasts until his late 30s, early 40s.
He's 34, which I didn't realize. I thought he was 33. But I mean, the thing is, like, it doesn't really matter. He's on whatever the final list is of just the guys you'll never forget watching. And it was cool to see him in a finals game in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Doing his thing.
The new dynasty with the Warriors against the dynasty of old.
Well, you know, if they don't win, I had this moment. There was one moment out there when it was like he's out there with Porter and it was like Looney. And it was basically all the non-starters. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of in the 08 finals when the Lakers were like a guy short. Remember they had to play Radmanovich. They probably had 7 guys and there would be these moments when Kobe was just out there but Lamar and Pau Gasol weren't out there. And it was like, and you could kind of feel it where, oh, this is pretty good. Like if you take Kobe out, we have the next 5 best guys in the court. it did feel, I felt that way a couple times today. It feels like there's so much pressure on him to score because unless Clay's hitting, Poole, the Celts seems like they've figured out at least a little bit. He was pretty erratic tonight. Other than that, where are they getting scoring? Wiggins is all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, this is why like it seems like, at least in a vacuum, Boston's the better team. When you factor in injuries and everything else, I mean, maybe they're not in the series. Maybe they don't win the series if Steph and Clay have incredible performances. But you're right. Like, the Celtics have, you know, better top-end talent on the roster. They have better, arguably better depth. I mean, I think in game
They have more options. More, you know what I mean? Like, more lineup options.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the fourth quarter, like, unfortunately for you, Derek White doesn't play, but this speaks to it.
Same game.
I mean, it speaks to that point in terms of, like, Boston starts the game with two bigs. They pull Robert Williams early, like you said. They go with Horford at the five. They play pretty much just with one big for the whole rest of the game until in that fourth quarter when they rode Robert Williams and then brought in Horford and played with two bigs again. But you can't have Derek White out there with those two guys. It just hurts your spacing too much. Maybe even just with
he missed one wide open three and we never saw him again.
Yeah.
Because Curry was, even though I thought he was doing a good job, Curry was still hitting shots.
Derek White made him work.
Yeah,
and that also speaks to also the greatness of the performance by Steph. Like, he's getting worked by Derek White. Derek White's making things hard on him. He's still flourishing and he's being attacked on defense. And he has three guys on him sometimes.
Well, remember in the 2015 finals, Dellavedova was having a moment where he was falling around. You remember that Cleveland team? Where Kyrie was out.
The tiny, speedy, annoying guard, right?
The Curry now would have torched that 2015 team. He's got so many more tricks now. And just like the reservoir of information his teammates have now with how to play off him and send him picks. There was a stretch in third quarter where it felt like Looney just set a pick for 17 straight Warriors threes. And they really play. I would actually be a little discouraged if I was the Warriors after that game, only because I thought they did some pretty good stuff offensively. You know?
Yeah. And I still think the Celtics have that trick in the pick and roll. They were one of the lowest frequency blitzing teams in the NBA this year, but also one of the best when they did it.
Yeah.
And we've seen Steph face some of that, including against Dallas last round. But if Celtics do need to pull that out at some point, I think that's kind of their wild card defense that they can use against the Steph pick and roll, which they're using a lot. They're running a lot of pick and roll with Steph. And it's not always traditional high pick and roll, Luka style, Harden style. It's sometimes having a smaller guy go up and set the screen knowing it'll be a switch.
Yeah.
But they're still having a lot of on-ball screens set for him. I just wonder if at some point we see Boston pull out that aggressive coverage, if necessary. It just feels like they're saving it to me, like considering they're doing so much drop.
That's interesting. Yeah, because seven games, you want to at least have a couple
more
looks.
And if you do that starting in game one, you're going to wear yourself out.
That was like Bud in the Bucks series. He kept trying to add stuff. And then by game seven, he's like,
ran out
to my game one strategy.
Ran out of options, yeah.
Warriors only took 15 free throws. The Celtics took 24.
Boston was attacking a lot more, too.
I felt like the game was pretty fairly called today. There was two flimsy Curry calls that I didn't love. But I also thought Tatum, you know, he only took six free throws. He could have ended up with 16 free throws in the game. So considering how loud the crowd was, I thought it was pretty fair. The Warriors were 15 for 40 from three. And I think in the second quarter, Kerr just put all his shooters out because he was like, we're going to get blown out. Maybe we can hit some threes. And it actually worked. They kept it, I don't know, what was it, within like 9 or 10 at halftime?
Yeah.
They don't have that. This is where they really miss, I think, whatever Kuminga is 3 years from now. It's like they could bring that guy in a time machine. They need like an athletic wing with size who can get them offensive rebounds and some athlete moments. They just don't have it.
Yeah, they are missing that. And, you know, Kuminga also could provide some of that shot creation too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not might not be a primary guy in 3 years, but if he follows a Jaylen Brown-like trajectory,
right,
and can at least do a little bit of it in 2 or 3 years, that would be, you know, of great benefit for them. Because right now, like you said, Jordan Poole, erratic.
They're just a little small.
Yeah, they're a smaller team. And Clay, I mean, I love Clay, but like off the dribble, he's just a non-factor right now.
Yeah.
He can't create off the bounce for
you. And Clay, he had 0 points in the first quarter. He finished with 25. I actually thought there was a moment when it felt like, is Clay kind of back? And then it faded away. I think, you know, like Jaylen Brown as a rookie, he played 12 minutes a game in the playoffs, right? Tatum in that 2018 playoffs, mm-hmm. I think he was playing like 27, 28, and they desperately needed him to take over in the series, and he just wasn't ready yet. He was young. Kuminga's, I think, further away than both of those guys. But if you're a Warriors fan, or if you ran the Warriors, or you're one of the owners or whatever, would you feel like you might have left the title on the table here by not making a move at the deadline? Like, you're a guy short, and would you redo that? If the whole goal is to win a title, you think like the Lakers traded away 130 picks for Anthony Davis for the bubble title, and now they're in shambles for the rest of the decade. If I was a Warriors fan, I don't think they realized they were going to be this close to a title. Like, could Miles Turner have helped this team?
Of course.
Could, I don't know, anybody who could have had some size?
Derek White.
Derek White. Mm-hmm. Could he have helped the team?
The Warriors front office, they talked about it before the finals when they did some of their
pressers. When they were doing their victory laps about how smart they were that they kept the young guys together.
Kerr said, everybody said, I shouldn't be running pick and roll, even though they're running like 30-plus pick and rolls per game for Steph. But, I mean, ultimately, though, for Golden State, though, I was on the side of don't trade these guys unless it's like a no-brainer deal, you know? And I think if you're the Warriors, who would have made sense to trade for? Like you said, Turner might have helped. Maybe if you just flip one of them. Could you have gone for Bradley Beal? Maybe not, because he dealt with that wrist injury.
He was hurt anyway.
He was hurt.
Yeah.
He didn't look like anywhere near the same guy. So I don't know, like, who was the option aside from like some high-end role players.
Well, what type of player is it? Is it like a... Like, for instance, could they have gotten Jason Richardson? Now, they're luxury
tax. Not Jason Richardson.
Josh Richardson. Josh sounds like my dad. Yeah. It is like 12:30 night. But like even like a Josh Richardson, I guess the issue for them is every guy they
add. Is Josh Richardson really swinging your title odds?
No, I'm trying to think of guys who were available at the deadline, though. I guess it was pretty slim pickings.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I just don't know who the option was that made sense on mortgaging your future for increased title odds now when it doesn't necessarily increase title odds. Like Kuminga, Moody, Poole, these guys could be really what create...
How about Larry Nance?
Yeah, somebody like that would have helped a lot.
Covington?
But like the fact is for the Warriors, though...
Covington would have been interesting.
Well, you mentioned the Patriots earlier, and Tom Brady sustaining success.
Yeah.
For a team like that, they were able to sustain success because they continue to invest in their future. Same thing with the Spurs. So for the Warriors... Even though it does hurt title odds this season, they're of a mindset, well, we're trying to win for the next 5-10. And whether that's right or wrong, I mean, you can argue either way, because like you said, they may not be back here again.
Yeah.
Like, there's no guarantees of that, right? Like, we know that again. Like, with Tom Brady, how long did it take after their third Super Bowl to win another one?
It was 10, 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
I, just for the record, I agree with you. I actually don't think they should have traded Kuminga or Moody. Wiseman, maybe.
Wiseman, what's his value, though?
I don't know.
Pretty close to zero, considering like the money he's making, too.
I think they played it correctly because you couldn't have predicted the Middleton thing. And I think Milwaukee is honestly better than both these teams.
Yeah.
You couldn't have predicted that. And you couldn't have predicted whatever the fuck happened to Phoenix. It finally came out, all the COVID stuff today, which we'd been hearing for a couple weeks.
Yep.
One player tested positive for... I wonder who the one player was.
Just look at the box score.
Yeah. but yeah, you have those two moments and all of a sudden they're playing for the title. But I wonder if they're in like a 2008 Lakers kind of moment where the Lakers made that Gasol trade. Got a couple breaks, went all of a sudden they're in the finals, but you could tell they didn't have the right roster yet. And maybe the same thing for the Warriors.
And by the way, they can still win it. As we said, they can still win it. Like they may not have needed to make a move.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, if I was a Warriors fan,
you'd be pissed.
What
off.
Would I be thinking about you'd tonight? Very, would I be mad they didn't make angry. A trade? Oh, would I be mad at the refs? I'd be mad at Draymond because he sucked tonight. Yeah. We should talk about that.
Yeah.
So Draymond minus 13, fouled out. 2 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. Late in the second quarter, he was putting up a club trillion. He hit the 0-0-0.
Shout out, Titus.
Yeah, he had it going. He's really an offensive liability. The reason he succeeded in game two, because It was like they turned the fouls off for him in a video game. But the Celtics, I just didn't think respected him at all offensively.
They don't.
They have reached a point now where they're like, you do whatever you want, dude. If you want to shoot, awesome. Please do.
Why should they respect him on offense? What reason has he given?
None.
I mean, you know the meme online. It looks like he's wearing a backpack.
They're doing now. He had one. He had a drive down the middle, and they were playing him like he wasn't even going to try for a layup, a.k.a. the Rajon Rondo, late career Rajon Rondo, yeah, where it's like, he was going down the middle and they're trying to figure out who is he going to kick it out to, because we know he's not going to shoot.
At one point, that Rajon on a behind the back fake, it stopped working because people knew it was coming.
Yeah, they got it. With the Draymond thing though, so he, 3 days of Draymond punked the Celtics. Some good press conferences by him. His press conference podcast stuff has been up and down, but I thought his press conference about the old guys was really good. You knew the Celtics were going to respond in some way.
You like Draymond's pressers more than the pod?
I haven't listened to the pod, but yeah. I like his pressers. He comes out, the crowd is ready for him, which we knew.
Oh, yeah. They were ready.
So I was thinking, because I've been to...
they had a chance a minute in.
Right. I've been to a lot of these Celtic games with the villains on the other side, especially in the playoffs. It's not a hatred for him. Like Samson before the 86... Game six, like the crowd fucking wanted to kill him. Bill Laimbeer, after he punched Bird in 87, same thing. They wanted him to die. Like that was, you could feel it. It was, this was more, it felt more like fun. Even though I know they're chanting, fuck you, Draymond, which I don't agree with the fuck you. I wish they were just doing the Draymond chant.
Were you chanting with the crowd?
I was not. You're avoiding
another Jalen Green situation.
I don't like the fuck you.
Good pod with Jalen Green.
The kids are there. I thought it was kind of fun. It never felt like it crossed some sort of line. No. The crowd was ready for him.
It was all good fun.
Yeah, he loved it. He was ready. He was talking. It was good theater.
I loved it. It was enjoyable. The people behind me, I was sitting in the last row of the media section in the lower bowl. Every person, I turned around at one point, every person, every one of them. I mean, it was a great crowd.
Honestly, he must have loved it. Oh, deep down.
Exactly.
This is everything he wanted.
I mean, we haven't seen his post-game presser tonight.
No.
Or I'm sure maybe he'll talk tomorrow if he doesn't tonight. But I guarantee you, he's going to be firing back at Celtics fans just like he's firing back at everybody else.
Grant Williams stuck up for himself and the team that one time. He got testy with them. They had to separate him. Then there was another one. Draymond got the sixth foul on this 8-second rugby scrum. I still don't know it. I didn't understand what happened. And Draymond was just trying to get kicked out of the building. He was going at, I think it was Courtney Kirkland.
Oh, you see him give the stare down?
And Courtney Kirkland he side-eyed him.
On that. Yeah.
I thought it, I was like, oh my God.
He stared at him for
he was
15
furious.
Straight seconds until they said a word to each other.
He was furious. But yeah, it had a good pro wrestling feel that I enjoyed. Draymond, just the perfect villain.
Yeah, I love Draymond for that reason.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about his limitations as a basketball player and how it's helping the Celtics out in the series and hurting the Warriors. And I mean, we'll see what the Warriors do long-term with him. He's eligible for a contract this summer.
Mm.
But from a pure theater standpoint, this is as good as it gets. I'm thankful for Draymond.
The only three guys I feel like the crowd actually like despised since I've been around is Laimbeer and Sampson and then Kyrie. All for different reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Kyrie stuff with the Nets, that was less theater and more like, we hate your guts, which is fine. It's sports. This is, people cheer, they boo. Mm-hmm. Like, sure. I never felt in the stands like a cross line. It was just like, we don't like this guy and we're here and we're going to boo this guy.
It's fun. You know who I used to hate? Anderson Varejao.
Oh, yeah.
And Sasha Vujicic.
That's a good
both
one.
Both of those guys. I couldn't stand them.
That's a good one. And then Ray Allen, when he came back after he left for Miami, there was definitely, he got the crowd going. So it's happened over the years. Jason Kidd was probably the ugliest because, they were trying to get in his skin. He had some personal stuff going on. That was my least favorite. But this Draymond thing's fun. I was surprised. There was a couple moments where I thought he would turn to the crowd and do like the wave them on to go even more. But he was, it just didn't seem like he had a good feel today.
I mean, the Warriors in general felt like the less urgent team. Is that fair to say? I mean, it felt like Boston just came out firing, cutting to the rim, fully prepared, hustling.
Yeah, I was watching Kerr. Like, game two, he was right at midcourt, locked in, going nuts. and he knew how bad they, this one, I didn't feel the same energy.
And there was that, the full court pass by Smart to Brown in that third quarter as well, kind of caught the Warriors sleeping on an inbound pass.
That's bad.
I mean, that was just the, you know, the example that pops into my mind too.
Well, for their bench, Porter, 21 minutes, 6 points. Poole, 24 minutes, 10 points. Peyton only played 11 minutes, 2 points.
Wasn't great now, tonight.
Yeah, and I think Kerr realized pretty quickly, like, the Celts, Jalen's feeling it. Tatum's probably coming. Smart's doing stuff. Like, we're not going to win this game on defense. We have to outshoot them. My guess would be game four will be way more defensive for them.
Does it feel like at times Kerr's throwing darts, you know, figuring out who's going to work? You know, with Peyton, he tries out Bielitsa for a couple of minutes in the first half, too.
Yep.
I mean, he hasn't really given Iguodala, you know, extended run since he returned. Obviously, just played a minute tonight off the bench after Draymond fouled out. But, like, do we see Moody? Any chance of that? Is there any chance of Kuminga didn't work really before, but Moody was solid in the opportunities he got last round.
I don't think we see him in a Boston game.
But should we see him? Like, Kerr is going to trust his vets. But should we see somebody like that? Moody was not bad.
Being in the building today, just for the people listening, like, it was fucking rowdy.
It was really loud.
I don't think that's a spot for Moody. You're throwing a rookie into that. I thought Poole seemed flustered. You know,
it was loud.
It was loud, and the crowd was pretty drunk, like leaving.
I
felt like I was leaving like Sullivan's Tap or something after the game.
I mean, the fans were like, I left the arena pretty shortly afterwards because we were recording this, and like, people were chanting on the streets. I did a quick call. You know, I couldn't hear me on the phone because it was so loud. You know, and it was crazy.
It's
inside,
not like,
inside.
It's not like they needed to be energized for a finals game, but I do feel like the 3 days of Draymond punked the Celtics put the crowd in another level. It really was a big story out here that, you know, and it definitely in Celtic fans all over the place is just like, why did we let that guy do that to us? Are we tougher than that or what's going on? So I think it seemed like they stood up to him. I don't know what he's capable of in game four. You know, on the other hand, he did like 7 things in game two that now they can send that to the league and be like, hey, he's doing this, he's doing this, he's doing this. He had one play in the first half. It was the first half. It was a drive down the middle by, I think, Curry, and Draymond just did the screening out like it was a rebound, but the drive, Curry's driving by the guy, which is, they always call that or for foul, but he still has like these little tricks that...
Did you see the replay of him kind of like clotheslining Tatum on a free throw rebound?
Oh, was that when Foster kicked him out of the free throw thing? There was another time Foster just kicked
earlier,
him out.
Earlier in the game.
Yeah.
They've got like a bunch of retweets. I saw that. I don't know exactly which moment it happened though, but I did see it on Twitter.
Yeah, the path for the Warriors is they need to be more physical. They need to win on defense and having those quarters that the Celtics have when they just like, you know, there's 5 seconds left on the shot clock and somebody's 38 feet from the basket and super physical, try to out macho them like they did in game two. And, you know, I ultimately like, who are the guys that you can count on in that game four? Because I think it's going to be, I can't see them being able to beat the Celtics 3 games in a row. I think they could win 3 of the next 4, but 3 in a row seems far-fetched to me.
I think the Celtics are going to win the series. I don't know how many games, but I think they're the better team.
I think they're a better team. I don't know if that means they're going to win this series. Yeah. I am more confident than I was 5 hours ago.
Well, I mean, understandably so. You just saw Celtics win.
I think it's going to be way more physical, though. And
sure.
How the refs interpret some of the Draymond stuff, Looney, they're going to have to really, I think, beat up Tatum and Brown more than they did. Mm-hmm. And
do you pull Draymond off of Jaylen Brown?
Yeah, I don't think that worked.
So put him more in off-ball help situations.
They need Draymond's rebounding. If you're going to put him 25 feet from the basket, who's going to rebound for you? So they got to do that. All right, I have some non-final stuff I want to talk. NBA, some trade stuff, but we'll take a quick break. Before we go, I'm trying to think of some scuttlebutt. What have you heard about... Did we cover the finals? I think we did it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we covered the finals, yeah.
All right. Celtics are 4-point favorites in game four. Finals MVP. Well,
there is one other thing. Chris Haynes said, he tweeted out, Steph Curry says his foot injury feels similar to how he injured it against Boston in the regular season, but he doesn't expect to miss a game.
What does that mean? So he re-injured the foot?
Yeah, he said that 5 minutes ago at his post-game presser. That's from Chris Haynes, who tweeted that out.
Yeah. Then Klay Thompson said, real classy, good job, Boston, about all the F-bombs in front of the kids. I agree. I don't like the F-bombs. I wish, just do the Draymond trend. Just do the Draymond. Mm-hmm. Go. Like, I don't love the swearing because there were some kids there, you know? And I just don't get it.
Kids know swearing. They got TikTok.
His foot injury feels similar to how he injured it against Boston in the regular season. That's not great. So you think he got hurt on that rugby scrum?
Yeah, that's the play where Draymond was given the stare down afterwards, right?
Did anything illegal happen on that play?
I don't believe so, no.
Any scuttlebutt that you hearing at these finals, the last three games?
Yeah, I reported some stuff on The Ringer this week on Monday in my article about Utah had reported.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
The Bulls are another team that has some interest in Rudy Gobert. I know it was reported today. Forgive me, I forget who said it, that the Jazz aren't really exploring offers for Mitchell right now, but they are listening about Gobert, which connects with what I've said. It seems like Gobert is the more likely guy, at least at this moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, we know Danny Ainge over the years. He does his due diligence on everybody. So I'm not sure how much to read into that. Other than that, what else do we get? We talked earlier about the Sun stuff. The Blazers with the number 7 pick. Seems like they're seeking out a lot of possibilities to move that. They want to help and build around Dame. I'm not sure who actually is acquirable. I mean, like, they're telling teams about people like Beal and LaVine. They're dropping big names up there.
What's going on with LaVine? Why does it seem like he
so with
may
LaVine,
be available now?
With LaVine, I was told that the Bulls weren't initially offering the full max. And so there was actually negotiation happening. I think that's changed where the offer will be with a max. But whether LaVine takes that or not, that remains to be seen. If you're Zach LaVine, there's definitely a lot of teams that would want a young scorer in his mid-20s who can play with and without the ball. Like, imagine, like, LaVine could be plugged onto literally any contender in basketball because of his ability to play with and without the ball.
Yeah, he could have played in the game we went to.
I mean, like, LaVine, like, think about him on the Warriors in place of Klay Thompson, for example. He can do all the off-ball stuff, you know, coming off of screens and handoffs. He can cut to the rim. He's a major lob threat. But he can also run pick and roll for you. He can handle the ball and run a little bit of offense. So you can plug him into literally any team in the league.
Can we just call this trade into the league?
Zach LaVine? Where's he going?
Zach LaVine for Harden.
Mm.
What's more fun than that trade?
That's a fun trade, yeah.
He would be great with Embiid.
Yeah.
Harden gets his own team again.
LaVine and Maxey in the backcourt together? That'd be fun.
And DeRozan just goes to Croatia and doesn't want to start the season.
Yeah. I mean, poor DeRozan if that were to happen. Then.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah. I don't think Harden has nearly the value.
But with the Blazers, though, I mean, Miles Bridges, Jeremy Grant, just a couple other names that have been connected with them.
And you had on Monday, you had the Gobert for Vucevic and Patrick Williams.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of like just an idea.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense salary-wise. If you're getting Gobert, you're trading Vooch. So it's a matter of, is the other piece Patrick Williams? Is it
so you give up two high lottery picks for Vooch and then a third high lottery pick to get Gobert?
Or would you be willing to do that? How high are you on Gobert?
I would not.
You wouldn't?
I would not do that.
How about
I think he makes way too much money. I would not feel good about him at all.
If you trade for Gobert, you have to be in contention. Like, this is our final move to go over the top, to fortify our defense.
That's not the Bulls.
No, it's not. I can understand why they might feel that way. If you have Gobert with DeMar DeRozan, and if you're able to keep Caruso and Lonzo, you know, and then maybe you got something going there.
We sure Ayton just isn't the solution all the way around.
Do you trust Ayton on a new max contract when he himself said years ago how, you know, his goal is to make it to his second contract in his NBA career, and the Suns constantly have to push him and motivate him to play at a high level? I'm not sure I would.
Yeah, maybe Chris Paul's a dick. How do we know?
I mean, yeah, sure. But Devin Booker.
Aggregators. Simmons says Chris Paul's a dick. I was just theorizing.
Devin Booker's the guy that pushes him. Yeah. I've heard. Like, he's the one who presses the right buttons for Ayton.
I don't know who is going to be fired up to pay Rudy Gobert like $48 million a year 2 years from now. That's the part I don't get.
I mean,
I just don't know how that's a winning recipe for a basketball team, because you're now I'm in the luxury tax. See, the third best player in a title team, probably.
Yeah.
You can get that. There's other teams have people like Rob Williams for $12 million, Brooke Lopez for $11 million. Mm-hmm. These centers that, you know, you want to spend your money on the score perimeter people.
So I had a conversation with somebody about a month ago about Gobert, exactly what you're talking about, where they pay him. So like the way they built their defense is the way teams build their offense. Like, so with Luka on the Dallas Mavericks, everything, you know, goes around him.
Yeah.
High pick and roll. You have shooters around him, cutters. You want smart decision makers on defense. You want guys who are switchable and versatile. With Gobert, they built their entire defense around him, where he is the sole focus, like a team builds.
So why'd they put so many shitty defenders around him?
Because they were relying solely on him as to get stops, just like teams on offense solely rely on sometimes one or two players to create offense, to create baskets for you. The problem is offense is more important than defense. Good offense is always going to be good defense. And the fact is like you said, getting paid $40+ million, he's getting paid in the range of those high-end offensive guys. And some of those offensive players are also good defenders too. So I think with Gobert, you're right that he is overpaid for what you expect from people making that type of money. But I still think if you plug him, like if you imagine Gobert in place of Robert Williams.
But Robert Williams makes,
I know, but like
25%.
But like forgetting about the money aspects. Imagine Gobert in a role like that. That's where if you're a team, you can look at him as kind of the final potential acquisition to go over the top, have a dominant interior force on defense and a guy who's a lob threat on offense and a great screener, great rim runner and everything else. So
can I give you a couple trades?
Sure. Gobert trades.
Utah calls Milwaukee and says, we'll trade you Donovan Mitchell for Drew Holiday right now.
Interesting.
Who says no?
I mean, if you're
Kyle, turn the fucking camera on.
If you're Utah, I'm not doing that deal. I want picks, and Milwaukee doesn't have the assets to give.
Who's more of a winning player? I have Drew ranked higher than Donovan Mitchell.
So you're making.
I might have been messing around with the trade value column for 3-4 hours in the.
Okay.
I mean, without words, just the rankings. I don't know if I'm capable of writing the words anymore.
So you're saying if you're making that deal, if you're Utah, you're trying to still win.
If you're Milwaukee, I think you hang up.
Really? Hang up?
I think I'd rather have Drew Holiday than Donovan Mitchell.
Really?
I'm trying to win a title with Giannis.
I haven't
seen Donovan Mitchell play defense in a playoff series ever in his life.
But is that because he's unhappy and wants to push his way out of Utah?
What does that mean? Are you competitive or are you not competitive?
I mean, that's disappointing. Like Mitchell at Louisville, like in college.
He was a fucking turnstile in the last playoff series.
It's really,
I think Drew Holiday is a better player. I do.
So with Mitchell, at Louisville in college, he was busting his ass on defense. He was really good.
Those days are gone.
Early in career with the Jazz, he did that. I interviewed him last year and he talked to me about how like the conditioning aspect, that's been the toughest thing for him to learn in the NBA. How to know when to take rest and everything. I wonder if it's kind of a conditioning issue that's playing into the poor effort with somebody like him.
Or he's just not good defensively.
Might just be that too. He also small. That like no matter how good you are, you're always going to.
I would rather have Drew Holiday than Donovan Mitchell.
I wouldn't.
I am on the record.
Mitchell scoring. I still believe in Mitchell. I'm buying Mitchell stock if you're selling it.
Would you rather have Darius Garland or Donovan Mitchell?
Darius Garland, younger.
Right.
Better deal.
But think about this.
And if you're Cleveland, I wouldn't want to trade for Mitchell. I don't think he's going to want to stay there long term. Mitchell's a big city guy.
Yeah, that's fair. Would you rather have LaMelo Ball or Donovan Mitchell?
LaMelo Ball on the rookie deal, factoring that in, yes.
Would you rather Pascal Siakam or Donovan Mitchell?
That's interesting. I mean, Siakam.
You'd rather have Siakam. I would too.
Yeah, I'd rather have Siakam, yeah. But that's an interesting thought, though, for Toronto, considering their roster.
And you'd rather have Brandon Ingram than yes. Donovan Mitchell at this point in their career.
Oh, I love Ingram. You know I love Ingram.
Would you rather have Dame Lillard or Donovan Mitchell?
Are we assuming Dame comes back as Dame, healthy, the abdomen injury is not an issue?
From his weird stomach thing?
Are we assuming that, or are we? Yeah. Is that in question?
This is my point. Is I don't think people think, oh, if they trade Mitchell, there. I don't know if they're if his value is anything close to what people seem to think it is.
And so many teams have guards,
yeah,
or shot creators, right? And I think for Utah, like that's where Danny Ainge is going to feel out the market, and it's very possible he feels that Rudy Gobert can bring in a greater return than Donovan Mitchell for all the reasons that we're talking about. The concerns about his defense, the size, will he stay on this new team? And the fact is that with somebody like him, how many teams need a guard?
I think Danny goes to Orlando and says, give me all your white guys for Donovan Mitchell.
Giving up Franz Wagner and Mo Wagner?
We're going back to the old 80s Utah Jazz. We're 75% white guys again.
Well, I wonder what the highest pick is that a team would give up for Mitchell.
Oh, the reason I brought up Mitchell... Well, Zach LaVine probably wouldn't want to go to Utah, but if they called Chicago and said, we'll flip you Donovan Mitchell for Zach LaVine, who says no faster? Because if I'm Utah, I'd rather have Zach LaVine.
Well, I mean, if Zach LaVine's going to leave and you're Chicago, maybe you don't have a choice but to say yes.
Yeah,
I think you'd have to say yes. In a case like that.
What about Paul George or Donovan Mitchell?
George.
Even despite all the surgeries and the wear and tear. It's like 30 years old.
I mean,
I have Paul George as well.
He's still so good defensively, Bill.
Shout out to Dylan Berkey, who loves this segment and is just wearing a smoking jacket, thinking about how it's going to look on YouTube. Who would you trade Donovan Mitchell for? I got you, Dylan. My big picture point is, if I were them, I would trade Mitchell because I actually think there's going to be certain teams that
we just said how there's so few teams that might need him.
We're smart. I'm saying there's a dumb team out there. Okay. What if Sacramento...
The number four pick?
Yeah, what if Sacramento's like, we'll give you Davion Mitchell and the number four pick for Donovan Mitchell. I do think...
How about the Pistons? You didn't mention them. Pairing Mitchell with Cade Cunningham.
He needs the ball. He has to go to a team that...
Does he need the ball or is Cade the perfect guy to create shots for him and they can create shots for each other? Mitchell can play off ball. He can catch and shoot. But he can create too.
I'll tell you who would say no in a heartbeat. Minnesota and Anthony Edwards.
Oh yeah. I mean, of
they'd
course.
Be like, are you serious?
No, that's there's no chance.
Would Toronto trade Scottie Barnes for Donovan Mitchell?
No. No way.
They wouldn't, right?
No chance.
This is my
Zero.
Point.
You see Scottie Barnes was at the game tonight?
He was?
Yeah, he was at the game.
Yeah. This is a tough one. What have you heard about the Nets?
Things are just weird. I mean, it seems to be a lot of noise out there about
what
could.
Would you bet your life on KD being on the Nets next year?
Of course not. No. How could you bet your life on anything regarding KD? You never know what he's going to do.
Let's go bet your life. It's like 1 o'clock and I'm groggy. Bet your life. Would you bet on Giannis being Milwaukee yesterday? I would.
Yes, I would.
Luka on Dallas, yes. Jokic on Denver, yes. Curry on Tatum, Embiid, Morant. Evan Mobley. I've just listed eight guys. I'm positive they're going to be on their team. Devin Booker. Cade Cunningham will be in Detroit next year.
Yep.
I would not bet my life on Kevin Durant, but I don't know where he would go.
How about Pritchard on the Celtics?
No, because I think Ainge is going to offer three first round picks for him. The Durant, like, who's the home for him? Like, what if this goes sideways? Because every summer, something goes sideways.
Well, the greatest, I don't know if even heel turn makes sense. He's already heel turned multiple times, but would be going from the Nets to the Knicks. I don't even know how that's possible. He just signed his max contract. Are the Nets really going to trade him to the Knicks? Is it a team in the West? Who would
it be
in the West?
It'd be funny if OKC was like, we'll take him back. Here are all our
picks.
That'd
be funny, yeah. Get Russ, too. Lakers dump him to the
Russ.
I don't know. Who would it be in the West?
It could be like Miami, right? Like, what if Miami?
Well, Miami's going
did like
for
a
stuff.
Butler, Hero, and some other stuff.
Well, Miami wants like all of the above: Mitchell, Beal, LaVine. They'd obviously want KD too.
I think Hero's on the table for him. I thought
100% is
the Riley quote about two-way players are who win playoff series. Yeah. That was just directed at Tyler Hero, 100%, and a little bit at Bam too. Like, you got to be a little better offensively.
Now, KD just signed his max last year, and it's maybe kicking in this year. Is there a path for him to actually push his way out? Like, let's say Kyrie, they don't retain him. Mm. He bounces. let's say, Ben Simmons, all the uncertainty there. Is there a path for KD in not even the first year of his contract yet to push his way out? It just seems unrealistic.
It's the NBA. We've seen everybody be able to push out of teams if they're not happy. We saw Harden do it twice in a year.
That's true. But it's not like there's incentive for the Nets, though. They don't have their picks. So it's not like you can tank for Victor Wembanyama next year.
They have to get one of like the 15 best players in the league back.
Yeah, it would have to be a trade for another good player and you continue competing with that player.
There's not a trade.
How about the Grizzlies for KD?
I don't think he gave up
Desmond Bane.
I don't think he wants to leave New York. He's in a weirdly similar situation to LeBron and the Lakers, where he can stomp his feet and pretend he's upset.
Are we sure he still has that power after everything?
Who?
KD.
No, I'm saying the Nets have more power in the situation than KD does. There's like, well, you're under contract. And KD kind of doesn't want to leave New York either. So they'll figure it out. But I think if I were them, you have to move on from Kyrie. You cannot bring him back.
But what's the alternative?
You have to trade him. You have to sign and trade him. So, Marcel and I did some sign and trades on Sunday. Like, even if you're getting Jalen Brunson back, I would do it.
The idea that I have involving that is Kyrie to the Lakers.
Yeah.
Westbrook to the Hornets. And then Rozier and Hayward to the Nets. Add picks, fluff it up however you want. That's like the foundation of the deal. Yeah. What do you think about that for all three of those teams? Because that connects the Mark Stein rumor, right? With Hornets and Lakers and Westbrook.
I don't think they can look KD in the eye unless they get somebody who's good.
Let's say we got you Gordon Hayward, former NBA All-Star.
Or you just need the cap space back, where like Russ goes to OKC, Kyrie goes to the Lakers, and then you're basically getting nothing back other than whatever.
What teams would even want Kyrie besides the Lakers?
I think
Clippers?
I think Dallas and the Clippers. Clippers definitely, I think, would do it. We talked about that on Sunday night.
Is Kyrie who you want to bet on with Luka if you're Dallas?
No. But I think...
be pretty good, though, on paper, those two together.
It could end up just being like Reggie Jackson and Marcus Morris for, something like that. We'll see.
So you're not giving the money to Kyrie no matter what? No.
Not unless it's a one-year deal.
How about Harden? If he opts out?
I wouldn't go higher than 2 years on Harden.
So you want him on a prove it deal, which,
I get a look at him for year one. If it's going the same direction it was last year, at least he's a giant expiring in year two and I have some flexibility.
I think that's a fair way to look at it with him. Yeah.
I don't think the Sixers will do that. I think they will.
Think they're going to pay him?
I think there's
handshake agreement after bringing him back, bringing the squad back together.
This is tough times for Daryl Morey's stock. I might have to unload it. Daryl, I'm sorry. I have to unload the stock. If he made like a handshake agreement for a max for Harden, that's an absolute catastrophe.
No, that's a handshake agreement that you break.
You would think. Yeah. We've seen stuff get broken before. Mm-hmm. Kyrie was standing on the court.
I mean, did Harden...
telling the Celtics he was resigning.
Did Harden hold up his side of things? No.
No,
of course not. They did not anticipate
drinks. all right, KSC, this was really fun. I had a great time.
Me too.
I'm glad we got Dylan Berkey a video. Appreciate you coming over. It's now 1 o'clock. When we come back, my daughter is going to explain Stranger Things to our audience.
Zoe's coming up.
Zoe Simmons is coming up next. All right, my daughter Zoe Simmons is here. Stranger Things came out. When was the last time the show was on? 2020?
Oh my God, like 2019. Summer of 2019. Right before the pandemic happened, which I think is why it was so heartwarming to have this show come back for a lot of us teenagers.
Well, it came back, but it half came back because it was like a split season.
Yeah, like 3/4 of it, I would say more accurately. Because I think 2 more episodes or 3 more episodes at most come out in late July.
You know what I heard about those episodes?
What'd you hear?
I heard they're very long.
They're very long.
Like,
how long?
Like 2+ hours.
2+ hours.
Yeah.
For each epi?
Yeah. Really long ones.
Wow.
All right. So what was your review? Well, first of all, was it good to be back with these characters? Because some of them, like Millie Bobby Brown looks like she's like 30 now.
Yeah. But you know what? They made her character look like she was this juvenile little thing. Like she doesn't look like a 30-year-old in the show. Although it's very strange, she looks a lot like Joyce, who's Will's mom in the show.
Mm. Well, that's not good. She was like 15 the last time we saw her. So So I didn't watch this season. I'm probably not going to. But what did I miss? What was like, give me like the top three things that blew your mind about season four, partly Stranger Things.
I mean, this show never fails to keep me on my toes because the second I think I know something, I know nothing.
Okay.
Are there spoilers allowed here or should I keep my mouth shut?
I'm going to put this at the end of my podcast.
All right. So we start off, the first few episodes are slightly slow. We know that Hopper's going to be alive. That's just something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Somehow, Joyce and Murray, who travels all the way from Indiana to California, where Joyce and her family now live, to get away from all the craziness of Hawkins. But Hawkins follows you no matter where you go. Remember
good,
that.
Good idea to get away from Hawkins.
Yeah, I think it's a very fabulous idea. Why would you want to be in a rural town that's being harassed by multiple ghosts? But anyways, Murray and Joyce decide, okay, we got this really suspicious letter in the mail that is alluding to Hopper being alive, but it seems as if it's some sort of ransom situation where he's unsafe.
Yeah.
And they have to go find him. So they decide, okay, let's just go to Alaska for however long we may be needed there and leave our children behind.
What's in Alaska?
That's where Hopper was, allegedly at a boot camp, like a Russian boot camp sort of situation. But like, who would leave their children in a new place, a completely new part of the world, just after they've experienced one of the most traumatic things possible, not even a year before, like 180 days before? That was, to me, just completely weird.
What was the traumatic thing 180 days before?
Oh, when the entire mall lit on fire and they watched multiple people die and things from an underworld come up and try to eat them.
Yeah, probably.
That weird thing. So
probably not leave the kids behind.
Wouldn't leave the kids behind. That was just strange in itself. But this season taught us about the upside down in ways that we had no idea existed. First of all, we found out that Elle was the one who actually invented the upside down in some way, or she was the finder of it she created
it. What's the upside down?
Oh, Bill.
Yeah, I don't.
What the hell?
I don't watch the show.
What the hell? This is my favorite show.
I know. Well, I don't watch it. Do you see me watching with you?
The upside down is the upside down. It's this world that reflects. It's like you look into a mirror. It reflects our world, but it has all these evil creatures in it.
Wow, it's like Carnival things. Mirror.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's Carnival Mirror.
Okay.
So the upside down has this mind flayer named Vecna, who is released in this season and is murdering teenagers left and right, which is just the most ridiculous thing ever. Just absolutely. He murders people by lifting them up into the air and then cracking each bone in their body and gouging their eyeballs out. So multiple teenagers were discovered murdered in this way. And that obviously didn't go down well for our favorite little teenage squad up in Hawkins.
So why do teenagers like a show so much where teenagers just get murdered with their eyeballs coming out of their heads?
You know what my only issue with the season was it was a lot more scary and ghost oriented than any other season before. Because the seasons before, they were more sci-fi like.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like being brutally murdered. But in this season, we saw multiple brutal murders from this Vecna.
So like
person.
R-rated or PG-13?
I'd definitely go with a PG-13.
Not but like
for
Halloween
a show that
where like...
I've grown up with these kids.
Yeah.
Like these are my family on screen practically because I was watching the show when they were just the same age as I was. And now they're 21 at oldest. And I mean, I guess it makes sense for the show to be more intense in a murderous way, but that innocence that I was very used to back in 2019 when season 3 came out was kind of lost because it's a lot more intense of a TV show to watch. Like I was nervous watching it on my own and I've never felt that way with Stranger Things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nervous?
I was nervous. Like, I was really like nervous. I was watching the last
episode.
Telling your
brother to sleep with you at night?
Oh, I called him an instant after I finished and I was really scared, but I think we should talk about the last episode because
okay, let's hear it.
It was absolutely terrifying. So in the last episode, there's three different things going on. Joyce and Murray are in Alaska trying to save Hopper from this high-tech hidden prison, this Russian prison where they're just being treated like animals, being abused, being blah, blah, blah. They're doing all this work for the Russians. Somehow Hopper murders like 10 different Russian soldiers with no shoes on and hardly any materials with a gun that he found. He escapes. They find him. They take him back. And then the Russians' tactic was to try and murder the 10 most problematic prisoners with an animal from the Upside Down. So they basically put 10 Russians or 10 Russians captives or American captives in this chamber with an Upside Down animal who just rains havoc on them.
And who was the animal? Was it like a pit bull?
There were these demi dogs back in season 2, and it was like a version of a demi dog. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. And they basically made a show out of it and just watched all of the people get murdered except for Hopper, because he knew how to escape from the demi dog. So he somehow takes over the entire Russian prison, escapes with Joyce and Murray. He's free. That happens in the
this
very beginning.
It's hilarious to hear this all described, because this sounds
it's
like
the most
dumbest
ridiculous
show I've ever heard.
But it's so not dumb.
What
it's,
is a demi dog?
A demi dog. It's you don't understand.
Don't.
You
just
don't understand.
Going.
So just don't even. Just don't even talk about it.
Can I adopt a demi dog? Are they like rescue
you
dogs?
You want a demi dog? Demi dogs are
is it better
are
or worse than Murph?
Demi dogs don't poop, so I think that there's some advantage there. But anyway, so they escape Hopper. Hopper's safe. That's an A-plus part of the show.
Great.
But then somehow 4 of the characters get stuck in the Upside Down.
Oh, no.
They've found that at the sites of the murders of these teenagers, because they're trying to solve Vecna, of course, they find that at the sites of the murders is where you can enter the Upside Down. There are portals to get into the Upside Down. So 4 of them fall into it. Steve is the first one who just ends up falling into one of the traps and is in the Upside Down. And he can't get out because there are these murderous birds that are trying to guard all of the gateways because they're trying to keep him in there so Vecna can murder him.
Did he see the Sacramento Kings in there?
Sacramento Kings?
They're the worst NBA team. I think they're in the Upside Down.
They might be up
They've
there.
They've been in there since like 2006. Keep going.
So Steve is in there. Nancy follows him next. Then Robin follows Nancy, and then the new guy on our show, I can't quite remember his name, but he is like the
new guy.
The new guy. We'll call him the new guy.
Yeah.
And he's the one that's being convicted for all these murders because they think he's a Satanist who caused all of these deaths.
Yeah, I heard
to happen.
There was like a Satanist element
that's
to the
what
Stranger
they,
Things.
They allegedly.
I don't like Satan stuff.
I don't like Satan stuff either. See, it's like getting creepy.
Yeah.
But they think like.
Kind of messes with
allegedly
you.
That. He was a Satanist and he was murdering all these people, which in reality was not the case. Vecna was doing it and he was just the butt of that. But they all end up in the Upside Down. They're trying to escape. And there was this incredible cinematic scene where they somehow can communicate with the 4 other people that aren't in the Upside Down, but they are in the same spot as the Upside Down people are. It's like they're in the mirror world, but in the same house. They all went to Nancy's house, and the 4 that were in the Upside Down were in Nancy's house. But then the other 4, like Dustin and then Max and Lucas, were in the real world, and they could vaguely hear Lucas talking. So they start communicating.
This sounds like the Memorial Day party you went to with the 20 bodyguards.
They start communicating with a light game, and it was just the most incredible scene.
Yeah.
Because they somehow broke open the Upside Down, and then they were free.
Mm.
But here's the thing. This entire season, we didn't see much of Elle, who was a leading character throughout this entire show, but she definitely took a bigger role.
Who's
in
Elle?
Season 3.
Is that Millie Bobby Brown?
Okay. Yes. So Elle actually ends up being recaptured by Papa, which is the guy, the hospital guy who originally gave her powers.
Right.
She gets recaptured by him because she has lost all of her powers due to overuse when she murdered the monster from season 3 and closed the gate to the Upside Down, which the Russians were
like
trying
Kawhi
to
Leonard.
Break through. Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard lost his powers after the 2019 finals. There's a lot of sports parallels in this
know.
Show. Keep
well, you always seem to make those.
Thank you.
But Millie is now trying to re-find her powers and Papa is helping her. So she is reliving all of these experiences that she had throughout her time in the hospital, which she had blocked out most of. So he put this little headpiece on her. She was reimagining all this stuff. She felt like she was truly there and she was discovering how she originally gained her powers, which would help her regain them.
Yeah.
And so there is this scene in the hospital. If you're not being worked with by Papa, you're in this extra room where you're just doing little mind games to try and work your powers, exercise them per se. So she's in she's in the she's in the hospital room, and there's a proctor, there's nurses everywhere, so that they make sure that none of the patients do anything bad, because this is like it's a hell for these kids. Like, you can't even imagine.
Yeah,
whatever, their brains are being picked. They're little pets. But turns out that this guy was actually number one, the original patient in the hospital that Papa had taken over. But just wait, gets better. They had shown that Vecna had affected this. There was this alleged serial killer that was in a highly guarded prison that two of the girls had visited because they wanted to learn more about Vecna. They didn't know that there was this parallel quite yet.
Yeah.
But this house was the origin of Vecna, where two family members got murdered. It turned out that the little boy that lived in that house, he had the special powers that Elle has without having to learn them from Papa.
It's like The Shining. When
he
Danny
was the OG.
Scatman Crothers had The Shining together. Yeah.
He was the original power guy. So he realized that he obtained these powers. He ended up murdering his whole family because he just thought that he was better than everyone else. He didn't end up murdering his dad because he passed up before that. His dad thought he died.
Important.
The dad got taken.
I've been saying that forever.
The dad went to prison because it was suspected that he murdered all of his family, and the kid remained free, got caught by Papa. Papa was working with him, ends up being a nurse in Papa's hospital. And then in this hospital, this is all a flashback. Meanwhile, these hospital experiences that Elle is re-experiencing. So at the beginning, very beginning of the season, there is a scene where Elle is covered in blood and Papa's like, what did you do? And she allegedly murdered all the patients in the hospital. Turned out that number one she'd taken a chip out of number one, which was controlling his brain. He went insane and murdered everyone in the hospital. And then he was about to murder Elle. She sends him into the upside down.
Drake protected her.
She sends him into the upside down and he becomes Vecna.
Oh.
So he's the mind flayer. How crazy is that?
So that was the big reveal.
Right at the end. And that it was the scariest. I'm telling you, I've never been so scared in my life. I am a horror movie fanatic. I love thrillers. I'm all for all of that kind of stuff. We've grown up around that. That's just the way we work in this house.
Chris and Sean didn't believe that we showed Ben Halloween when he was like 4.
And I watched Chucky when I was 3. So I had reoccurring dreams about him for multiple years afterward.
I don't like the Chucky movies.
It happened. But I was legitimately scared watching this episode of television. And I do have to say, the beginning of the season was definitely slow and I missed seeing all of the kids together and doing their thing in Hawkins. But I get that they have grown up and that's just how they have to do it now. But I like the place that we ended off at, and I have a few conspiracies about where we could be going.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. But my first question is this it? Season 4, it's done? There's no season 5.
I've talked to a few friends and they think that it should be over at season 4. I could never let go of this show and I don't want it to be over. Therefore, I'm not going to think that way, but I'm just not sure how many different directions they could go in, because it takes 3 years to manufacture a type of show like this with the intense scenes that they have.
It's expensive.
The sci-fi shit, it's absurd, the things that they have to do to make the show this show. And in that amount of time, Lucas is going to be 25 by the time they release the next episode. He can't be playing a freshman in high school anymore.
Listen,
he can't be playing a freshman in high school.
As you've seen, my favorite show, 90210, didn't stop them from continuing to carry the kids on to college when they had receding hairlines.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, as much as I really, really hope and pray that there will be another season, I don't think it would feel the same to watch these adults trying to play freshman in high school, because it just doesn't make sense anymore.
The show is so authentic.
Yeah. And you can't overwork something that's so perfect. Like, it has been so perfect every single season. Season 2 sucked, but I blocked that out. Season 1, season 3, season 4, all perfect the way that they are. They didn't put too much. They didn't put too little. Like, I got everything I needed.
Iconic show for your generation.
I think it is. I truly do.
So
it was
30
shaping.
Years from now, and the people are in and out of drug rehab who are on the show, and you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad they're still alive. And that'll be your show.
Sincerely, it is. It is our show. We grew up with these kids, which I think is so important. We went through a pandemic and we are still loving them. This was a comfort show for myself and a lot of my friends. Like, it's just something that you go back to and it makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside. despite all, right, so all the murders.
What are your theories, predictions for the last couple episodes? Let's
Someone's going to have to die, and that's just going to be the way it is. There has to be.
Doesn't Millie Bobby Brown have to be the one who dies at the end?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that the show would end. So I'm,
yeah,
that is a good thought that she would have to die. If they're ending the show, then that's how they should do it. She should die, which would be heartbreaking, but I would be more hurt to watch someone like Dustin or Steve die just because they are like my little.
I don't know who those guys. People are, but I would be sad too.
They're very cute and just like tiny and like Steve's
Who's
not tiny.
Who's your crush on the show?
Steve.
Which one is he?
He is the just graduated out of high school, like Dustin's older brother. He kind of takes care of the group. Nancy's
How tall
ex-boyfriend.
Is he? Is he tall?
I haven't looked that up because I don't want to ruin it. I'm assuming he's
Does
like
Steve
5'10".
Know that you only consider people who are like 6'1
and
up?
Over. Doesn't concern him. Jason Tatum, if you're listening to this, you know where to find me.
Jason Tatum, please stay away.
Don't stay away, Jason.
What were we just talking about?
Theories.
Okay.
Elle is going to be murdered. I feel like if they want to end the show, that's how it should go. She dies. And then every tie to the Upside Down is also murdered in turn.
All right. So Dustin and Steve.
Dustin and Steve can't die. That would be traumatic. They can't do that. They can't kill anyone that's too close to our heart. Like, no offense to Lucas. He can die if he wants to die. Max, I wasn't that sad before she was going to die. If someone like Elle, Steve, Elle's probably going to die. But Steve, Dustin, any of those kind of heartwarming, like brother-like characters, if they die, then I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Ben, what's your... Ben Simmons showed up for some reason. What's your big prediction?
They're killing Steve. It's happening.
I don't think
that... I promise
that,
you they're killing Steve.
No, but I think that'd be more heartbreaking than like beneficial to the show. I don't see why they'd do something like that.
Because it's a heartbreaking... Because
yeah, they're
but
they
not
going
to kill 11. 11's the...
Yeah, but this... Honey, the show's going to be over.
No, it's not. They got renewed for season 5.
Since when?
What do you mean? That's been announced.
I don't know if I believe anything that comes out of your little mustached mouth.
Okay, anyway. It's either Steve or Robin's going to die. And it's going to... Either
Robin
Steve
would
or
suck.
Robin.
Oh my god!
I think Robin's gonna die.
I really sincerely hope that Steve doesn't die. He can't die. The show would be missing a vital character that he provides the brotherly, safe character. He keeps all the kids in check. We need Steve. You can't get rid of Steve. Get rid of Robin. As sad as that is.
All right, we agree. Kill Robin.
Kill Robin. But so, don't.
Back in February 2022, it was announced the series would return.
Oh.
For fifth and final
Lucas
season.
Lucas will be 25 as a sophomore in high school.
It's going to take a while.
Well.
And then...
maybe they'll have a new cast.
The Duffer Brothers have teased there may be spinoffs set in the world of the show, although they'll be concluding the story of 11.
Oh, with she's dead. 5. Ben, she's dead.
So she's they dead. Kill 11?
11's dead.
Okay. Anything else?
Does
this... I mean, you and your brother don't have a lot of things in common anymore. Is this Stranger
is,
Things
this,
is like
it
at
really
the top?
Is, has held us together these past few weeks. It's really all we have left.
Yeah, what else do you guys have?
I don't know. Like Ben has his trips to the village and hanging out with girls from my school and then traumatizing me as I watch them walk past me in the alley. And I have nothing else with him. It's really just that. Everything that I hear about him from others.
What's it like to be a senior in a week?
It's definitely a weird thought. I do feel like I am a senior though. Like I'm a true senior.
You're
I feel like I'm
a senior.
I'm old enough. I feel old enough. When I do think of like that classic high school senior, I think of people that might look older than me. But then again, I also realize that they put 25-year-old people as sophomores in high school on TV. So there's right. no accurate representation.
You know what I meant to ask you about this?
Huh.
We were talking in the car about Ben's generation.
Oh.
How
Yeah,
how
let's talk
kind
about
of
this.
A little reckless they are. Like they're
It's not even reckless. It's like 12 and 13-year-olds think that they should be behaving like 18, 19-year-olds. And it's ridiculous to me because there are these vital years in your life between ages 12 and 15 and a half, where it's like you're awkward, you're ugly, you don't quite know how to talk to the other
well,
sex.
Ben's pretty handsome. I mean,
Ben's handsome, but you're awkward, you're ugly, you don't know how to talk to the other sex. You like don't go out to parties.
You're very self-conscious.
You're self-conscious. You're like, and it's vital. And it's like you have some sort of obsession with some sad TV show like Grey's Anatomy or whatever it may be, but it's like, you are a sad human being. Like you are a shell of yourself for these years. No, just chill. And then the rest of your life is great, but it's like you need these few years that you look back on. You're like, okay, like life was sort of shitty, but there are a lot of good moments and I needed that to be who I am today, because if I grew up too quickly, I wouldn't appreciate what I have now. Like Ben has probably experienced just as much as I've experienced as a 17-year-old. And he's 14. You look too old. You dress too old.
Ben, you don't have a mic. You're not allowed to talk. Wait, I think part of the problem is the pandemic.
Well, because of course.
The 12 and 13-year-olds, if you were like 6th, 7th, 8th grade during the pandemic, you're trapped in the house.
Yeah.
You don't get that like a little bit of an exploration. So yeah. Now like all of a sudden you come out and you're in the 8th grade and you've been trapped in the house for 2 years.
Yeah.
And now you're like, I got to go out. I got to go here. I got to go there.
And you've had that time to like go through your ugly stage without anyone looking at you and then fixing it, because you're so focused on yourself in that time where it's like you're just working on yourself, making yourself better. But I feel like it's important to be ugly and be ruthless and be like not know what you're doing in front of other people, because it's shaping.
I think my ugly stage lasted for like 7 years.
Well, that's just you then.
It was like probably till like my senior year in high school.
Well, you weren't doing too bad. Didn't you have 2 prom dates or something? I just think it's important for kids to experience what kids should truly experience. And it's just all rushed nowadays and everyone wants to be old. And then when you're old and you're doing all of this type of stuff for the rest of your life, you're going to be like, why didn't I enjoy the years when I could have enjoyed my youth? I feel like I fully lived out my youth, and I don't think Ben's living out his youth in the way that I lived out my youth.
Well, I think Ben's living out like 5 youths.
Ben's living out being a terror to every security guard in any mall vicinity.
He's laughing proudly. Ben, just don't do anything.
Like,
dumb.
I wouldn't even dare. I still wouldn't even dare to mess with any sort of authoritative figure. Like, it just blows my mind that like these freshmen in high school don't realize that they're freshmen and that there is some sense of seniority. I also go to a pretty sheltered high school where it's like everyone's nice to everyone, but like kids need to be reality checked.
You mentioned that where because the 2 years got taken out of the pandemic,
they've never experienced the hierarchy either. Yeah. It's like all these benefits that seniors and juniors get, we don't even get anymore because of the pandemic. Like we can't go off campus. There's no like extra part of being a upperclassman in high school. And I just wish that like, I genuinely do think it's important for your character to not be hot your whole life. But, like Ben has been attractive throughout the entire duration of his life. And I'm not saying that I was unattractive, but I wasn't as attractive as he was at his age. And he'll never experience like that feeling uncomfortable in himself. And I feel like that's an important thing to experience, because then you become more humbled and you're like not an asshole. And Ben's an asshole, so.
Ben, you suck. Which one of you is more likely to take care of me when I'm much older?
Oh, absolutely. Ben pointed this finger at me within 3 seconds. I will be there at the hospital home and Ben will be partying it up at a rooftop at Century City. He'll graduate from the Century City grounds to Century City Bar. Jeez. You do nothing for this family.
At least I have one of you. All right, so we'll do Teen Culture Awards for the half year at the end of June. So start making your...
Stranger Things, Don't Kill Steve, and Jason Tatum. My number is 213.
All right, thanks, Zoe Simmons. Bye. All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks to Kyle Creighton for producing, as always. Thanks to Dylan Berkey and Steve Cerruti. Thanks to Kevin O'Connor. Thanks to my daughter, the one and only Zoe Simmons. And I think we're going to see Friday night. After Game 4, God only knows what's going to happen to that one. On a seat there, on a wayside.